There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Well, I do feel passionately, and my passion does match the passion of religious zealots and fundamentalists. However, there are different reasons for passion. I'm passionate about things because I've looked at the evidence, and the evidence is massively convincing. Religious zealots, fundamentalists, are passionate the other way, not because they've looked at evidence, but because they've looked at the Bible. I accept the charge of being passionate, but it's passionate for a very good reason. I've looked at the evidence.
That's famous atheist Richard Dawkins explaining why he is a passionate atheist. He says he's looked at the evidence is overwhelming, and that is the source of his passion. Contrasted, of course, with the passionate beliefs of what he calls religious zealots and fundamentalists. I think he just means people who believe in God. Their reason, well, has only to do with looking at an outdated book that doesn't provide any evidence of any kind. Now, many, many atheists follow that line of reasoning set forth by Richard Dawkins, and many are equally passionate in their beliefs that there is no God. It's part 8 of a weekly series that we're doing on Christian apologetics with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Today we take up the counterclaim that there is no God. We walk through life, don't we? We walk through life assuming that there's a right and a wrong, that there's meaning and order in the world, that there's a rhyme and reason to things. After we leave the naivete of childhood, that is, of course, if there is no God, how does that change? Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and he's author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
So after we leave childhood, we generally, most people, in one form or another, go through life with a sense of right and wrong. They go through life with at least a hope for meaning and order in the course of events, that there's a rhyme and reason to things. If there is no God, how does all that change?
Well, you don't have any of it, of course, because then all morality and all values are simply human creations, and they don't have any necessity connected with them at all. They're not necessitarian whatsoever. By the way, it's interesting in the quotation that you played from Dawkins that he says that he's passionate about evidence, and religious people are passionate not about evidence. There isn't any evidence for them. There's only the Bible. And I think that's fascinating, because what he does is to rule out immediately, without any checking whatsoever, the possibility that the Bible contains factual evidence that is sufficient to support the existence of God.
So another contention that's often made, and I think maybe we need to respond to it here at the outset from the atheist, is that let's not start with God as a given. The burden of proof lies with those who would assert that there is a God. Are they right there, or are they wrong?
I think they're right. If you're going to assert something, then you have the burden of demonstrating it. I'm not very patient with the Christians who say, well, you can't disprove the existence of God. The trouble with that is that, you know, you can't disprove the tooth fairy either. We have a responsibility to present the positive evidence in behalf of Christian claims.
All right. Let's talk about the evidence. And this, of course, doesn't get us to the arguments that have been made classically don't get us to Jesus Christ. They just get us to a deity, an unnamed deity. How much do you value the classical arguments for theism?
Oh, they're valid, but you've just indicated the tremendous problem of focusing on them. They don't take you to Jesus Christ, and therefore they don't take you to salvation. The Bible says that the devils also believe and tremble. They believe in God, and it's not doing them any good. My approach to apologetics is very different from that of the so-called classical apologists, Norman Geisler and William Lane Craig, and so forth. I don't place at center the arguments for God's existence, even though those arguments are solid. Why? Because if you huff and you puff and you manage to convince somebody that there is a God, you still have the same distance to go to show that Jesus Christ is indeed the center of all things, and his death on the cross and his resurrection are the way to salvation. I think that apologetics ought to start with Jesus Christ. Theology, Lutheran theology in particular, but theology in general, centers on Jesus Christ. I think that apologetics ought to center on Jesus Christ as well.
So really, we're not just talking about an evidential apologetics. We're talking about an evidential and Christocentric apologetic, aren't we?
Right on.
So I want to come back to morality for a minute, and that is because it's often an argument that's made. One of the classical arguments for the existence of God is, you know, without it, there is no morality. And we've touched upon that a little bit. What do you make of this kind of, I would call it kind of a closed loop view of morality that the atheist might hold? And it's simple reciprocity. It is, my morality is, I'm not going to do anything to someone that I wouldn't want them to do to me, or I will do to others as I would want them to do to me. That's sufficient as a morality, and one does not need a God in order to hold to it.
Well, this is really a modification of the ethic of Immanuel Kant, the categorical imperative, that you should not act in any way that can't be generalized, that you would not be willing to have applied to you as well as applied to other people. Now, that sounds just fine, rationally, and it even sounds a little bit like the Sermon on the Mount, the Golden Rule. But the difference here is that when Jesus presents do unto others as you would have them do unto you, he's not providing the secular ethic. He's not trying to build up a rational case for acting nicely. What he's doing is endeavoring to convict the hearer of sin so that people will recognize they don't act that way. And as a result of this, they need Christ's personal presence in order for their life to be changed. The difficulty with the secular ethic, the categorical imperative, the notion that we shouldn't act in a way that can't be generalized, the difficulty with that is, of course, original sin. Even if a person recognizes that that is a rational argument, that doesn't in any way compel the person to live that way. My favorite example is that of Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan. You say to Genghis, Genghis, have you been out raping and pillaging again? And Genghis says, well, yes. Other people collect stamps, but my hobby is raping and pillaging. You say, Genghis, you mustn't do that. You mustn't act in a way that you would not want people to act toward you. You wouldn't want them to come and rape and pillage you. And Genghis roars and he says, ha, I'm bigger and I'm stronger, and they're not going to be able to do that to me, and I enjoy raping and pillaging, and so that's exactly what I'm going to continue to do. The mere fact that in principle, rationally, one can oppose the idea that everybody is equal and should be treated the same way doesn't mean that that's how human beings live. Human beings do not consider themselves as equal to other people. They consider themselves first. Robert Ringer did a book some years ago entitled Looking Out for Number One, and that's exactly what a fallen race does. And under those circumstances, presenting these rational justifications of morality is really kind of silly. The only people who go along with them are those that formulate them.
You mentioned a moment ago that an apologetic, even an argument for the existence of God, needs to begin with Christ. How would that look? How would that sound?
Well, it seems to me that the ideal apologetic is to get people to look at what Jesus said about himself and what the people who had immediate first-hand contact with him said that he said about himself. And if you examine these primary historical documents, you can't say anything about Jesus Christ that leaves out his affirmation of deity. He forgives sin. He says, I and the Father are one. No man comes to the Father but by him. Before Abraham was, he was. And he rises again from the dead to demonstrate the truth of these claims. If that's the case, then you're in immediate first-hand contact with deity. He then ought to be the source of your theology and your way of looking at the universe.
So how is his claim to deity and his verification of that claim, how is it central to a Christian understanding of the existence of God?
Well, the only other way to go at this is to try to build up a case for God's existence through natural phenomena. That's the classical traditional arguments for God's existence. And the difficulty with that is that you are involved in a number of philosophical steps in order to reach a certain conclusion, and you can use certain scientific data to help, but the minute that you present these data, the non-Christian is going to come back with counter-data. For example, if you say, look at how intelligently everything is designed, the unbeliever comes back and he says, well, things could have been designed better. We wouldn't have had to have germs and all of the miseries that come with ordinary existence. Whereas, if you start with Jesus Christ, you are in immediate contact with God within the framework of your own experience. There you have a human being, but a human being who presents himself as transcendent. And he demonstrates this by solving the greatest problem that human beings have ever had, the problem of death. So the approach to God through Jesus Christ is more direct, it's more understandable, it's more within the framework of our own experience, and it doesn't involve abstruse philosophical reasoning and a certain amount of scientific data, which open the door always to counter data.
Dr. John Warren Montgomery is our guest. He's a distinguished research professor of philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He is director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and he's author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference. We'll be right back.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Is it moral to believe that your sins can be forgiven by the punishment of another person? I would submit that the doctrine of vicarious redemption by human sacrifice is utterly immoral, a positively immoral doctrine that abolishes the concept of personal responsibility on which all ethics and all morality must depend.
That is the late Christopher Hitchens, also another famous atheist. Now, he's unique in one way, and we'll get to that in the course of our conversation with Dr. John Warren Montgomery. He at least strikes at the very heart of Christianity, that claim of the vicarious atonement. We're talking about atheism in our weekly series with Dr. John Warren Montgomery on Christian apologetics. He is, in addition to being Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, he's also director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. You can find out more about this annual summer study at Strasbourg, France, at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Montgomery, I do want you to respond to Hitchens there just for a moment, because of all the atheists that have come and gone in the last 10 years or so who have written their books and done the lecture circuit and things like that, Hitchens alone seems to understand what Christianity is about. He rejects it entirely, but at least he deals with the central claim of the vicarious atonement in the case of Christ. What do you think?
Well, for one thing, if you're an atheist, you have absolutely no basis of moral criticism. That is to say, in order to be able to criticize a viewpoint as being immoral, you have to have a standard of what is moral. And that's exactly what an atheist cannot have. For an atheist, all morality must be relativistic, because there isn't any absolute transcendent source for it. So my first point with the Hitchens-esque type is to point out that they have categorically no foundation to criticize anything as immoral. They cannot say that the Holocaust was immoral, and they certainly cannot say that a vicarious atonement is immoral. Then, beyond that, the fact of the matter is that substitution, one person acting in behalf of another, taking another person's problems on himself, is something that is common to all human experience. In society, no one person does everything. We do certain things for other people, and they do certain things for us. They take on areas of burden that we cannot handle, and we take on areas of burden that they can't handle. And it's in that kind of reciprocity that human society operates. So vicarious action is absolutely fundamental. Instead of its being immoral, it's part of the fabric of human experience. And great writers have seen the tremendous impact of this kind of thing. Dickens' Tale of Two Cities. At the end, Sidney Carton sacrifices himself for another person, a person who looks exactly like him. And he does this because he says, that person is worth more than I am. This is the climax, the emotional and ethical climax of the entire work. All of this parallels the biblical statement that greater love hath no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. The atheist, A, has no business criticizing vicarious atonement, And B, he is apparently unaware of the fact that that kind of operation is fundamental to human society and is, in fact, one of the most attractive moral acts.
Do we have, as Christians, and does the apologist, especially the kind that you have laid before us here, that which is not merely arguing for the existence of God, but a Christocentric evidential apologetic, do we have a built-in advantage with the atheist? And I'm wondering about this, that the what they deny, that is the very existence of God, is innate knowledge that they cannot entirely extinguish. It is simply woven into not only human experience, but into the human being.
Yes, I think that's so. There's the biblical verse that says the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And in Romans, you have the clear statement that the existence of God is written on the human heart. The problem with this is, of course, that as a result of the fall, many people make every possible effort to excise this knowledge, to get rid of it. And why do they do that? Because if they do have God still there somehow in the background, then they are not in absolute control of their own existence. The secular person today wants autonomy above everything. This is the argument in the Roe versus Wade abortion case. It's the argument in the most recent homosexual marriage case that people have a right to determine their own lives 100%. Well, you can only do that if you get rid of God in every respect. So there is that counter pressure that exists in human existence. There's the realization way down deep that, of course, there's a God, but there are implications to this, and if one doesn't like the implications, one will do everything in one's power to get rid of the whole business. It's also interesting that biblical verse says that the fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. It's possible to provide intellectual arguments of various sorts against religion, but way down at the heart level, at the cardiac level, if you will, one can't really eliminate all of this. It's there. The hound of heaven is coming up behind you all the time.
Finally, then, does the atheist have one of the arguments often made is, you know, the magnitude of human suffering in the world, and if this God proposed by Christianity exists at all, things would be very different than they are today. With about a minute and a half, can you respond to that very common atheistic argument?
Well, it assumes that the critic knows more about the ideal universe than God does. And obviously, if there is a God, his ways are higher than our ways, and his knowledge far surpasses ours. And therefore, the great philosophers who've dealt with this problem have said simply that the God of Christianity, given a choice among universes to create, would, of course, create the universe that involves the least suffering, the least pain, the least misery. What the atheist is saying is, well, he hasn't done that. But the atheist is really not in a position to compare the universe we're in with all other possible universes. So it's a gratuitous kind of claim on the atheist part. It really boils down to an egotistical idea that if we were running the universe, of course, we'd be doing it better.
Dr. John Ward Montgomery is Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court. of the United States. He's director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference. We'll conclude our series next week on Christian apologetics, talking with Dr. Montgomery about the Jesus of other religions versus the Jesus of the New Testament. Dr. Montgomery, thank you very much for being our guest.
We'll see you next week.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we are kicking off a massive weekly series with Dr. Ken Sherb. He would like to take us for the next 2 years, all the way up until the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, through the life, thought, and work of Martin Luther and the Reformation as well, spending the better part of the next year on Luther alone. We're going to begin it in the second hour of the program on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 4th, answering the question simply, who was the real Martin Luther? Dr. Ken Sherb will join us on the other side of the break for a beginning of a weekly series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November 4th through 10th, and join us for a live broadcast from CPH on Thursday afternoon, November the 5th. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale online and in store, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's warehouse sale, November 4th through 10th.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for you and the divine service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.